Tonight on the 80 page cast, do you want ants? Because that's how you get ants.
Yeah, we're back. For a limited time only. Well, for a movie anyway. We kind of forgot.
Decided not to get together for the, giant dozen superhero featuring Avengers Age of Ultron, but we all saw Ant-Man, so we're going to talk about Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, some of us are going to. A couple of us did.
Yes.
I'm new on the podcast. I'm Alex.
Yes, of course. This is Alex from our sister podcast, Stasis Pod, the Beast Wars podcast, available every week.
Yes, it's weekly, unlike our schedule, which isn't a schedule, the 80-page cast.
It's also way shorter.
Yes, it's quicker. It's
much
easier.
More focused.
It's much easier.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We're having fun. We're up to, we're recording 15 and 16 this week.
Yes. We just did Double Dinobot.
Right. So next up is the Spark and the first part of the Trigger.
Mm. Hooray for plugging our other stuff.
Yes. So we'll start with Ant-Man here. Before we get started on the movie itself, this movie had a bit of a troubled production history, as apparently they started developing it back in 2006.
Yeah, well, long production histories isn't really unheard of for movies, although I guess it's the longest for the Marvel movies, but...
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, not counting, you know, the Iron Man one, which was
yeah.
in development so long. I think they had Tom Cruise projected for it at one point.
Oh.
Also not counting the original Spider-Man, which was in development hell for a decade.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but it's not really that bad. It hasn't... Well, it was in long development, but it wasn't really started until 3 years ago with Edgar Wright. Maybe four?
Well, I mean, they hired Edgar Wright in 2006.
Oh, I didn't know it was that.
I was about to ask that.
Wow, that...
Whether he was involved from the beginning or not.
Yeah.
So that was... Wow, that was right after...
That's before Iron Man came out.
No, but I was trying to remember which one of his movies. That would have been after Hot Fuzz?
That's after Hot Fuzz, but before World's End.
Well, it was way before World's End, but the one in... What was the one in the middle? Anyway.
Yeah, I believe that is before Hot Fuzz, I think. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Edgar Wright is why I was excited about this movie, because before that I didn't care about Ant-Man.
Same
but then,
there.
Of course, that was also before we got so many Marvel movies that were good, or at least fun in the theater.
Right, I mean, this was even before Ant-Man had come out, so it was still other people making Marvel movies. And some of them were, you know, pretty good, and some of them were, you know, Elektra.
Oof. Yeah.
Some of them were pretty good, and some of them were made by Fox.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I'd like a couple of those X-Men movies.
Yeah, wait, who did the Blade movies?
That's New Line.
Yeah.
Although, apparently, Marvel has the Blade rights back.
Yes, and there are rumors of bringing Wesley Snipes back.
Fine by me. He's out of jail now. Hopefully he's got somebody else doing his taxes.
Had two really good Blade movies, which, until Marvel started making a lot of them, were the best Marvel movies.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they're not particularly comic booky movies, but anyway, so...
Ant-Man!
It's weird that Warner Brothers owns New Line, so Warner Brothers was technically making the first Marvel movies, even though they own DC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I guess we got some test footage for the movie back in 2012...
Some of which was sort of actually still in the movie, at least the running a gun barrel bit.
And the suit, I think, they pretty much had ready from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. The helmet might be different a little bit.
And then, you know, they cast the movie, and then last May, Edgar Wright left the project, citing creative differences, but he still got a couple credits in the movie for writing it and for as an executive producer.
Yeah, those contracts are weird.
Yes. And then they brought in Peyton Reed, who was an unconventional choice, I guess. He also directed Bring It On, Down With Love, and appropriately enough for this, he directed the pre-show for the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids Universal Studios ride.
So it's right up his alley.
Yes.
Apparently. I didn't know about Bring It On. I guess that's supposed to be good if you like dance movies?
It's not so much a dance movie. My sister really likes it.
Oh, yeah. Many people like it.
And I guess they also brought in Adam McKay to work on the script. Adam McKay, I think best known for writing and directing those Anchorman movies.
Oh, okay. So they had...
Writing. Punch-up. Sure.
I mean,
movies were written. They didn't just turn the camera on and point it at Will Ferrell and Steve Carell and wait for things to happen. The entirety of the second movie.
You gotta have at least a rough script.
Not seen that second movie, but I do not hear good things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I there was certainly a similarity with some of the humor in Ant-Man, I thought, and Anchorman.
I guess. I haven't seen Anchorman. I've seen the commercials.
Scott
that
Lang
first one is pretty funny.
At home in Anchorman, but he'd be too competent for it.
Yes. Well, and I guess Paul Rudd also in Anchorman.
Is?
Oh yeah,
I'm not
did not remember him in that.
Yeah, he's the investigative reporter, the guy, the possessor of Sex Panther.
Contains
parts of actual panther, and 50% of the time it works every time.
Yeah, that's weird. Anyway, Paul Rudd, a guy from movies that I've never seen.
You've never seen a Paul Rudd movie?
I don't think so.
Surely you've seen. You haven't seen Clueless?
No.
Have you seen Halloween 6?
No. I've seen Halloween 3.
Let's see. He's not... what would you have seen him in? You haven't seen any of those Judd Apatow movies, because he's in, like, all of those.
Uh-oh. I've probably seen some of them... That this might get cut out. What Judd Apatow movies?
Knocked Up, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I think I have seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I Love You, Man.
No, I saw part of 40-Year-Old Virgin. I've seen more of that than I've seen of Anchorman.
He was on Parks and Rec for a while.
Oh, right, he was
Reno
on Parks and
Rec.
Yeah. Right, he was Bobby Newport.
So Paul Rudd is completely unknown to me. The most I know about him is every time he goes on Conan, he shows one clip from a movie that's utterly horrible. So
Mac and Me. It's a kid in a wheelchair plummeting off an embankment.
I'm a little disappointed you brought that up because when we went into the plot, I wanted to just describe that scene instead of the movie.
We can cut that in post.
Okay. Nah, leave it.
Anyway,
the cast that is the best running gag in all of
I guess we might as well run down the cast here.
It's good for the running gag.
Paul Rudd, he's not playing the first Ant-Man. He's playing the second Ant-Man, Scott Lang.
The funnier Ant-Man, kind of.
The ex-con they hired to be the expendable Ant-Man.
Yeah.
The first Ant-Man, Hank Pym, we have Michael Douglas.
Yes, distinguished actor Michael Douglas. I really like Michael Douglas. You have seen movies with Michael Douglas.
Yes,
right?
I've seen movies with Michael Douglas.
The de-aging in the first scene was really impressive.
That was really impressive.
It looked like it was just B-roll from Wall Street that they didn't bother to use in Wall Street.
They got a time machine. I really didn't notice any problems. It looks like they just kidnapped Michael Douglas from 1989.
And put him in a room with John Slattery from today.
Yes, and Agent Carter, whatever.
Although I think maybe they made John Slattery look a little older than he actually is. Because he was just like regular John Slattery in the 60s in Iron Man 2. So this is like he looked older at least there than he did in this season of Mad Men. But what he shares with Roger Sterling this season is terrible mustache. It is a crime to give a man that handsome such a crummy mustache.
Oh yeah, they got the Howard Stark from the movies, not the Howard Stark from... Agent Carter, right?
Well, that's because that's young Howard Stark. And remember, he was also in the first Captain America movie.
Yeah, so wait, which was it the guy in this movie or the guy from the TV show as Howard Stark?
guy from the TV show from Howard Stark was in Captain America.
Okay, so it's consistent.
He's young Howard Stark. Old Howard Stark is John Slattery.
Okay, that's still a little weird. Anyway, the rest of the cast.
Okay, so we've got our female lead, Hope Van Dyne, played by Lost's Evangeline Lilly.
I have seen more of her than everybody else in this cast, well, except for maybe Michael.
Did you watch Lost?
I watched too much of Lost. I saw like 3 or 4 seasons.
And then did you see those Hobbit movies?
Yep.
And let's see.
That was it. That's still more than
so I've she's seen. Making a career out of being the female lead who's better than all the male leads in the movie but gets backseated.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't tell you that because I haven't seen Real Steel.
Oh, you know too.
The movie with it's basically Rock'em Sock'em Robots, the movie with Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Have not seen it. Apparently she's in it. Anyway, she's good in this, and she also has Cate Blanchett's communist haircut from that last Indiana Jones movie, which is a plus in my book.
Yeah, it's a nice kid. It's a little too severe, but it works.
And it works for the character, because she's kind of severe.
Yeah.
She is right. Justifiably pissed off throughout the entire movie.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And as our villain, we've got Corey Stoll as Darren Cross.
Another bald guy villain a la Iron Man.
He's on House of Cards. See him in things.
He was really good in House of Cards, and he was playing a character in this that was 50-50 his character from House of Cards and Kevin Spacey's character from House of Cards.
Well, I guess that's appropriate because he's also kind of 50-50 Kevin Spacey's Lex Luthor.
Oh, God, what if Kevin Spacey in House of Cards is really just Lex Luthor? What if season 4 of House of Cards is Superman showing up and fighting Kevin Spacey?
That sounds like a show I'd like to watch, then.
And he builds, like, a giant battle suit, and, I don't know, Robin Wright is in there somehow?
Yes.
Okay, and much like in the comics, Scott Lang has an ex-wife, in this case, portrayed by this summer's mom du jour, Judy Greer, who has played this exact role in 3 movies this summer.
Yeah, this, Jurassic World, and what was the other one?
Tomorrowland.
Oh, she was Tomorrowland? Wow.
I know.
So she's just...
She's been busy.
A mom who doesn't appear much in movie.
I mean, I guess she's kind of aged out of her previous role, which was the best friend in romantic comedies.
Yeah.
She's also Cheryl and or Carol on Archer.
Yes, and it's unfortunate. I mean, she's totally fine playing various moms, but it doesn't really give her a chance to use her comedic chops the way that Archer does, because she's very funny.
Yeah. Oh,
she's hilarious. And also, she never interacts with any of the other female characters in the... any other female character in this movie.
We'll get to that.
She interacts with her own daughter, I guess.
Spoilers, at the first time they share a scene is at the end of the movie. That is the only time there are 2 women in one shot, and one of them is a child.
Yep. And the scene still fails the Bechdel test because they're talking about her dad.
Mostly, yeah. Anywho,
anyway, she is engaged to Bobby Cannavale, who is, he's also very good. He's in, he was on Boardwalk Empire. I think he won an Emmy for that.
Oh, yeah.
He's in a ton of stuff. He's very charming. Obviously, David, you're a fan because he is from New Jersey.
Oh, yay! Jersey. And who else?
And Scott Lang is a criminal in this, so he comes with a whole sort of criminal crew of... they're just kind of his roommates, but...
One of them is actually his roommate. The other 2 guys just show up. His main roommate is Michael Pena as...
Yes.
What's his character's name?
Louise.
And he's
in, like, everything, and he's very good.
Yeah, I probably have seen him before, but he kind
you've
of
definitely seen him
the
in
show.
Something.
And the other guys are Dave, who's some kind of actual musician.
Yeah, it's T.I.
Oh.
He's a rapper.
And a generic Russian dude.
He is super Russian, and you've...
Probably
he's
seen
in a ton
before?
Of stuff. He's in The Dark Knight. Does a lot of TV. You've probably seen him in something.
Like, yeah, he was one of those, hey, that guy.
Yeah. I don't think he's usually Russian, but it was amusing all the same.
I'm sorry, I'm still back on Bobby Cannavale because my brain, for some reason, remembered him in this movie as being Brad Garrett.
He is kind of Brad Garrett-y.
Yeah.
I mean, Brad Garrett would be too young. Or, sorry, too old now.
Too old.
Yeah, but like, the attitude, and he's taller than Paul Rudd, so, yeah.
And he's kind of got the same voice.
Although, going back to Edgar Wright, I was assuming he was kind of writing that for, the tall dude from Shaun of the Dead. He's probably in all the movies.
The guy, their roommate?
Yeah, their roommate, who dies.
Isn't that the guy who plays Darth Maul? Like, the voice of Darth Maul?
Maybe. I know he's been in a bunch of other stuff, and I can never remember his name because he's British.
Right. Right. And later shows up as a naked zombie?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely the guy who voices Darth Maul, and you see him in a bunch of British comedy stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, I mean, it is a very sort of Brad Garrity performance. So, you know, Michael Bay, if you're going to put Triptychon in Transformers 5, Planet of the Earth, give Putt Bobby Cannavale a call.
Yes. Anyway, well, that's pretty much all, most of the cast.
So we start out at, there are a couple cameos that I guess we can mention when we get to them.
Yeah. Spoilers will abound.
We open in 1989. We're at the just-being-built Triskelion, the S.H.I.E.L.D. base, which later destroyed in Captain America, Winter Soldier. And an uncannily de-aged Michael Douglas is there, seeing S.H.I.E.L.D. heads...
Wanting to make them roll.
There's the aforementioned Howard Stark. There's Peggy Carter, who is also appropriately aged. She's not as old as she was in Winter Soldier, but she's still way older than Haley Atwell.
Well, it's hard to tell what age she is, because in Agent Carter and in Captain America movies, it's like, in this, she's never the same age in anything.
Weird how her age just keeps bouncing around in everything.
And then there's also a third guy, Martin Donovan, playing Mitchell Carson, who is a character from the Ant-Man comics. He's in the Irredeemable Ant-Man and is a dickish S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, which, surprise, he is also in this. Yeah, Hank Pym's found out that they tried to replicate his Pym particles, and so he resigns and also punches Mitch Carson in the face.
Because he brought up his wife.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we flash forward to the present. Well-meaning thief Scott Lang is getting out of jail. He's moving in with his old cellmate Louise.
He gets out in a weird scene that apparently... this is like the coolest prison ever, where everybody gets along, and the ritual of getting out is to try to knock out the biggest guy there.
Yep.
Peaches.
I mean, he probably wasn't in, like, maximum security.
No. But it's such, they're so jovial and violent at the same time.
It's a delightful subversion. Yes. They're trying to freak you out, and then it's not.
Yeah. Or it's possible that it is just a super tough prison, and just everybody's charmed by him because he's Paul Rudd.
Yeah. And then when he gets out and we first meet Michael Peña, he says that he's the only one that's ever knocked out Peaches.
Yes.
Which I didn't realize till a lot later. Oh, that's going to be a callback later.
Yeah.
Yep.
They basically set him up with the superpower of he can punch out anyone.
Yep. Mm. There's a lot of people getting punched in this movie.
Michael Peña is the Squirrel Girl of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
So far.
If they had the rights, I would gladly watch Michael Peña versus Galactus. Yeah, Scott Lang is having some difficulty finding a job. He ends up working at a Baskin-Robbins in what I guess is product placement, although it doesn't seem that kind towards Baskin-Robbins.
No,
it's weird. It's insulting to their customers and their management, and just portrays them as Orwellian.
Yes.
Yeah, and it goes on for too long. It's like a 5-minute-long joke at Baskin-Robbins.
I don't know. I thought it was fine, and it sort of set up, Lang's personality, and we got Greg Turkington, a noted stand-up comedian, as the manager.
That part of the movie was the one that seemed the most Edgar Wrighty to me.
Yes.
I guess.
Anyway, meanwhile, over at Pym Technologies, Hank Pym is returning to his company after a long absence, and now he's old Michael Douglas. He's kind of got a goatee, which I think appropriately hides his kind of jowliness.
Yeah.
And he's been invited back by Darren Cross, his former protege, who is kind of just Lex Luthor.
Yeah, well, at the beginning, he's not Lex Luthor. He just seems like business guy, which admittedly is Lex Luthor at this point. But
yes. And, you know, he's affable Lex Luthor before yeah. you make him mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, and Cross has finally perfected, or, well, kind of perfected. Kinda.
Well, it's not so much the Pym particles and him, Pym shrinking is just sort of an urban myth in the company. It's denied. Pym himself admits it. It's lies. Even though Cross shows actual footage of Pym, little tiny Pym, punching out people with tanks in Vietnam or whatever.
Yes. But it's kind of neat, as this gives us, I think, our first indication that there were superheroes going on in the Marvel Universe between World War II and, you know, Iron Man.
Yeah, there was things after Captain America in World War II that were happening, but they were in the shadows. It was things right. that were kept complete secrets.
It's like Marvel, The Lost Generation.
Yeah,
that was a series that came out that nobody read.
So anyway, so the formula was hidden and the existence was hidden so much that it kind of drove Cross to the point of annoyance, and I have to figure out the formula myself because you won't yes. give it to me, which is his entire character arc, basically.
I mean, he feels betrayed by the fact that Pym never trusted him to have it.
Yeah.
Which at least
the whole
you can understand.
Scorned by mentor thing.
Yeah.
You can see why he's a villain. It's like, that kind of sucks.
But. It does kind of suck. But I mean, it's partly that, obviously, you know, Pym saw, where we find out later on that, you know, Pym took him on as his protege because he saw himself in Cross. And then he didn't show it. He didn't give him the formula because he saw too much of himself yeah. in Darren Cross.
Yeah, that was a good little scene that shows up way later.
Yeah. So yeah, and also of note here is that Hope, Pym's daughter, is involved with the company still, despite Cross having forced her father out.
As we'll find out not quite as long later, it's because, yeah, she was the deciding vote on kicking him off the board.
Yep.
Yeah.
They don't get along too well for reasons that will be revealed later. Yeah. So Cross has this yellow jacket suit that is... And we see it's tiny. He intends to, you know, put out an army of them and sort of become like a global power broker.
Oh, yeah. It looks full-on evil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's sort of sold to the military, but that of course, means it'll be sold to anybody.
Yes, and it doesn't hurt that the yellow jacket suit itself looks super evil.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's this dark gray with some yellow accents and... claws that shoot lasers.
The whole thing just reminds me of that part in Terminator 3 where they're at Cyberdyne Industries or whatever pushing, oh, here's our new Terminator project. Isn't this
oh, yeah.
cool?
No, that's pretty much what that scene is. The Arnold outtake. What is it?
I'm Sergeant John Candy.
Oh, yeah, Candy, that was it. Yeah.
I don't think John is the right first name for that.
Something Candy. Sergeant Candy.
Although a Terminator based on John Candy, I think, would, you'd never see that coming.
That wouldn't be a good surprise.
He's just this affable fat guy, and then, oh no, he's a robot. So yeah.
Couldn't be worse than Wagons East.
This is true. So, yeah, obviously Pym wants to put a stop to this. Hope is kind of on board with putting a stop to it, although she thinks she could do it a lot easier than Pym could.
Well, to the point that the Pyms have actually been planning to put a stop to this for so long, they just didn't seem to realize he was quite this far along. They knew he was doing it, though.
And he's far along enough that he can shrink inorganic matter, but organic matter kind of gets turned into a little smear of pudding.
Yeah, that's the tricky part, which is going to show up soon.
Yeah, one of the guys from Mitch Carson from formerly S.H.I.E.L.D. is there. He's all for it. But there's another guy who is not for it so much, and he ends up getting shrunk down into a smear of pudding in the bathroom.
Yeah, I knew.
Pretty horrible.
With a scene that kind of reminded me of the scene in RoboCop, but only it actually works out good for the bad guy.
That is the scene that made me start thinking of him as Kevin Spacey's character from House of Cards instead of his character from House of Cards.
And notably, he kills a guy in that bathroom. That guy's name is Frank. He's switching things around. Kevin Spacey's character in House of Cards is named Frank. So anyway, Pym has a plan, and that plan involves tipping off. He's been watching Lang for a while, as his theft of the as the theft that landed him in prison was pretty high profile.
Yeah, it was sort of the perfect espionage thing. Well, it was like the company he was working for was doing something horrible, and he wanted to sort of
whistleblow.
Yes, that word. He wanted to whistleblow on them, but the only way to do that was basically to break into them and steal their information and give money back to people who they'd stolen it from.
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing just seemed like such an obvious test. Audiences didn't like him enough. We need to make his backstory more sympathetic.
Well, it does explain.
I mean, it's high profile enough that it would bring him to the attention of guy like Pym.
Yeah, it's like there has to be a reason for Pym to be paying attention to him, and that kind of fits.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a reason, but it portrays him as just a little too much of a career criminal for that to have been the idea when they were writing the script at first.
This is true.
That's a thing that seems to deviate from the Edgar Wrightness. They're like. Every third scene or so feels very Edgar Wright to me. And that's one of the ones that's like, that's a little off. It's not funny enough.
If he'd gone to prison for doing the whistleblowing like that, I don't think his wife would have left him.
I mean, he was still in jail.
Yeah. But it was like, a 2-year stint?
Yeah, but maybe she left him before. We're not exactly clear when.
I guess that's possible.
Or if he did any subsequent criminal stuff.
Yeah.
And we're not sure if that was his only crime, because he does seem like an awfully good burglar to have really done it the one time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a good second story man.
And he does later describe himself as a cat burglar. Not a robber. That involves threatening.
I'm not that kind of thief.
So yeah, Louise and his crew have been tipped off to an old guy with a big old house and a big old safe in his basement. What it contains, they don't know, but it's a big safe, so it's probably something valuable.
The montage is great, and I love the effect they'd have with the guy doing the voices for all the characters in the montage.
Yes. That's the first scene that feels really Edgar Wright to me.
That is super Edgar Wrighty.
Mm-hmm. And also shows us that Louise is a wine connoisseur.
Yeah, that was cute. It's like, I was at a wine tasting, and it's just... The way he does the roundabout story is so entertaining and scene stealing. It doesn't need to be there, but it adds to the humor of the movie.
Yes.
I'm not entirely sure if he's actually a wine connoisseur, or if it's just unreliable narrator version of him trying to make himself sound more cultured.
This is true. With the character, I can kind of see it going either way.
Yeah.
Because in the next version of one of those, or maybe one after that, he says he's at it like an art show.
Yes. Although he does seem pretty knowledgeable of the actual art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's named Robin Mark Rothko, so I have to assume he actually is just a super cultured petty criminal.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So they go in, they break in, they foil Pym's multitude of security systems, but once they actually get to the safe, it's just got this suit in it.
Yeah, and a couple of jars of colored water in the background.
Yeah. Man keeps his Kool-Aid in there. It's nice and cool.
I was impressed by the whole improvised heist sequence. It was actually pretty neat.
Yeah. Yes.
Although I thought it was cool that they went in depth on the whole fingerprint thing, but I was disappointed they didn't just use a gummy bear.
That was nice. I forget. The music at that point was really good. Was it the Ant-Man theme, or...
I think that was the main Ant-Man theme.
Which is really nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's very good heist music, and I love a good heist movie.
Yeah, and...
Oh, yeah, and this movie is basically just one big heist movie.
Yeah, this movie is like Iron Man 1 combined with a heist movie turned into a comedy.
Yeah. And somewhat incongruously, despite this thing just... Apparently he thinks it's a motorcycle suit, but he takes it anyway and then tries it on. It's
Well, there's weird. Nothing else in there.
I guess.
All that trouble to destroy a safe.
I almost expected a Superior Foes style, is this a sex thing question here.
Oh, that would have been...
But nobody wants to think about Michael Douglas in that context.
Also, when would he have asked him?
That is a good question.
It wouldn't really fit in anywhere.
So yeah, he tries this on in, I guess, in the bathtub, and it shrinks him.
Yes.
And this is where we get the first of these shrinking sequences, and these are really well done.
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah. They're pretty good in 3D. I guess they probably could have been better, but it utilized 3D.
I do think the 3D was well used here.
Yeah.
This is the first movie I've seen in 3D since Avatar that I thought was actually worth paying extra to see in 3D. I'm not sure Avatar was, but it was...
It's not a good movie, but it was a good spectacle.
Yeah, no, but it... Yeah, nothing really has been as much use of the 3D since Avatar, but there have been some fun things along the road since.
Yeah, no, this makes good use of it, and I think for this, it's not so much computer animation as sort of macro photography.
Yeah.
So these are actual backgrounds that they sort of composited Paul Rudd into, running around.
Yeah, the giant dirty tub. And a sequence of madness as he falls through the floors.
Right, he almost gets stepped on by stripper heels. He ends up in a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, the room below him is having a rave, and you don't hear it when you're in his room, so...
The installation when he was going into the apartment too.
But yeah, it's a bad building.
Floors is really good.
And then all this time, he can hear Pim's voice in his head.
Yeah,
he has no idea it's Pim. He doesn't even know who Pim is.
No, the helmet's just talking to him.
Is that the guy from Wall Street? Anyway, and he finally ends the sequence outside the building and on top of Garrett Morris's cab, which was amusing.
Which it was really nice. I was, oh my god, is that Garrett Morris? Oh my god, Garrett Morris is still alive? I haven't seen him in anything in so long.
He's on that Two Broke Girls show.
Oh, yeah, I should probably watch that show.
Not actually good, but, you know, it's nice to see Garrett Morris getting a paycheck.
Yeah, I'm not really in sitcoms anymore, but maybe one of these days.
Yeah, and that is a super obscure reference to the fact that Garrett Morris once played Ant-Man on a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
Wait, you just thought they put Garrett Morris in the movie for no reason?
I don't know. They got
Maybe they wanted to have him on set.
Comedy guys, you know, he may have been...
Yeah, that,
I forgot. I forgot all about that. Yeah, that's a good catch.
That is a super neat cameo that I would never have known about.
Even I, who saw way too much of the original SNL on reruns, of course, I'm not that old, missed that.
Comedy Central era or E era of we will rerun Saturday Night Live indefinitely during
both
prime time. Oh,
both. Wow. I really like the early seasons.
They had some really good cast members on the early seasons.
Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, Garrett Morris kind of got stuck as token black guy, but was a
funny token black guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was generally funnier than they let him be.
Yes. Funnier than Chevy Chase.
Yeah. Anyway, so he finds this incredibly terrifying and returns this back to Pim's house and then gets arrested.
Yeah, that's a good thing. He just quickly sneaks back in, throws it in the safe room that has no door anymore, comes back outside, cops. Oh, crap.
I wasn't stealing anything. I was returning something I stole earlier. Crap.
Surprisingly, this doesn't hold too much sway with the cops, and he gets arrested.
Yeah.
By his wife's new boyfriend.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. Oh, I think we did miss a scene earlier in the movie where he borrows his roommate's van to go to his daughter's birthday party and is explicitly uninvited from it.
Yeah,
yes. And also brings her the source of my favorite credit in the movie, which is Tom Kenny as Hideous Rabbit.
Yeah, I saw that in the credits. I wasn't even wondering who the rap voice of the rabbit was, and then I saw Hideous Rabbit's like, oh, that rabbit, yeah. The toy he gets his daughter, which is this frightening little stuff.
It is a hideous rabbit.
Yeah.
Was that new voice work from Tom Kenny, or was that just him getting credited for an existing toy that they shoved the voice box from?
I would assume that was actually Tom Kenny, just because I figure Tom Kenny probably isn't doing toy voiceovers these days. He's got all that SpongeBob money.
Yeah.
He's building himself a Frank Welker-style Scrooge McDuck vault.
Yeah, but yeah, that's where we first meet the new cop husband. And the weirdest scenes, like, first we see Paul Rudd encounter the cop, and we don't know he's a cop until the end of the scene, and then the daughter comes out, yay, daddy got me an ugly bunny, and she runs away, and then the ex-wife comes out, so, as I said before, there's no two women in any scene, ever, which is weird. Well, okay, I guess there are probably women in the background of that scene, but still. And that's listen, where
Judy Greer just goes by the W.C. Fields rule: never act with animals or children.
Yeah, but and then the new husband hates Paul Rudd, but the ex-wife's like, you could see your daughter again when you get your shit together.
I mean, I appreciate that she's not, you know, the bad guy in this.
No,
she's totally reasonable, and
that's nice. Yeah. But he later on figures out on paper how long it would take him to actually get his shit together. Which would mean he wouldn't see his daughter for like 390 days.
Yeah.
Which is why he goes through with the theft in the first place. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. I need some money.
So his lawyer shows up, except his lawyer is Hank Pym, who arranges for his escape.
And he covers the camera lens with ants.
Yes.
And then
delivers the suit via ants.
He has the ants carrying the suit shrunken down into his cell.
And then the ants also spell out the countdown as to how much time he has before the cops get there.
Which is really nice. It's like, that's a lot of control, although it starts at 10. So it's like, he gets that suit on in less than 10 seconds?
Yep.
It's full of Vaseline.
Well, I guess
he's Magneto, but with ants instead of magnetism.
It is a sex thing.
So he gets there via flying ant, which totally freaks him out, and he lapses into unconscious, but he wakes up at Casa Pym, meets Hope, who's not crazy about him.
She kind of hates him a lot.
Turns out she was the one who called the cops on him.
That's right. Of course, now I wonder who put him in those pajamas.
The ants.
That's entirely possible.
I mean, I can't imagine it being any other thing now that you've mentioned that. I'm just imagining her holding the earpiece, walking out of the room, and going, tell me when you're done. Tell me when you're done. Tell me when you're done. I don't want to see this.
So yeah, they outline the plan, which is to break into the building, steal the yellow jacket suit, and destroy the servers.
This is also when they introduce that the Pym household has a horrible ant infestation, including imported tropical ants chosen for how painful their bite is.
That's right.
Yeah, he has, like, what, four different kinds of ants?
They're the bullet ants, the crazy ants.
The little red guys.
Those are the crazy. They're fire ants.
Oh, yeah.
And then I can't remember what the third ones, or what the fourth ones are. But yeah, he's Pym, he's an ant expert. He definitely had those ants imported.
I think the fourth one's the flying ants, carpenter ants or something?
The carpenter ants.
And there's the ones that build the bridges.
Those are the fire ants.
Those are the fire ants, too?
Oh. Yes.
The crazy ants are the ones that do the electrical stuff, and the bullet ants are the ones who bite people, which is hideously painful.
Yeah. Well, it's supposedly those ants actually is way more painful than what they see in the movie.
Well, I mean, they call them the bullet ants because it's like getting shot.
Yes.
Eventually Lang decides that he is going along with this because what else is he going to do?
Yeah, he's already broken out of prison.
Yeah. His options are somewhat limited, and, you know, Pym seems to be a guy who kind of has it on the ball, so he could presumably help him out with his various jams.
He doesn't go along that easy. Doesn't he have a line like, oh, I should have stayed in prison, or I want to go back to prison?
Yeah
and
at the start of the explanation.
Pym finally hooks him by promising he'll get to see his daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what Pym's plan was for that. Was it just, I'll let you use the suit to go watch her sleep?
I mean, maybe, you know, he could use his, you know, various business contacts to get him a good job or something.
Probably, maybe.
After the jailbreak?
Yeah, the jailbreak is the massive monkey wrench in the system.
Well, he could also set him up with a new identity, maybe, ? I don't know.
But then how would he see his daughter? Because, like, stepfather is the cop who arrested him.
Okay, I guess Pym didn't quite think this through.
Or he was just bullshitting him.
Bullshit, also possible. He doesn't have any other options.
Right, I mean, we kind of thought you might get lasered to death anyway, so. Yeah. And he is pointedly not using Hope for this, despite the fact that she is shown to be way better at doing all this ant stuff.
Obviously better. Yeah, she's better at controlling the ants with the little psychic makes sound earpiece thing. She already knows martial arts from a very troubled point in her life. She tosses Rudd around a couple times, which is fun.
Yes.
Yep. She punches Rudd in the face, which is
fun. And she also knows, she knows the building inside and out.
Well, she works there.
Yes. Yeah. So bringing in this, well, in a speech that Rudd has a couple of scenes from now, he tells her in a car that the reason he's there is because he's expendable, and she isn't.
Yep.
Which, it's...
It seems like, A, Hank would have said that, and B, even if he hadn't, she would have figured that out.
Kind of, yeah, but he's spelled out for you. That's kind of the one problem.
That's good for the audience.
Yeah, but my one problem with the movie, aside from the fact that women never share a scene, which that's just weird, is that Hope kind of gets screwed at every point, but there's good reasons why she's getting screwed and not being the action star of the movie.
Right.
It's right on the edge of that's annoying, and okay, I know why, but it's still annoying.
Anyway, so let's delve into the backstory, which we kind of get around this point.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. Back when Pym was the Ant-Man, his wife, Janet, was working alongside him as the Wasp.
Yay!
And she was kind of better at it than he was.
At least as good, but she could fly.
Yes. And so they did various missions together, and at one, at which point, a bunch of Soviet separatists launched a nuclear missile at the U.S. They had to... They tried to disable it, but couldn't get between the plates, even at ant size, so she had to shrink down.
Because they were welded titanium.
Yes. So she had to shrink down further, and ended up trapped in the subatomic realm.
Yeah, she snuck between the atoms, and managed to shut down the missile, which was another Captain America thing? Wait, what?
It's kind of Captain America.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I suspect that much like Captain America, she's not actually dead.
No.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't find out for sure, but even though
Hank
he had
Pym
told
spent
his...
the next 10 years trying to find her and not telling his daughter what happened.
Not to mention, Pym says something at some point about the microverse. Shrinking beyond, like, atomic level is a microverse where time and space have no meaning.
So they can cast a young, charismatic actor as Wasp, although, spoilers, I don't think they're actually going to do that.
I think they will, but she won't end up being the Wasp because of the end of this movie.
My guess would be they cast a slightly younger actress than Michael Douglas, but still old enough to maybe kind of be Evangeline Lilly's mom. I kind of like the idea of getting Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
That's not a bad idea, although no offense to Michael Douglas. He was great in this, fantastic. How much better would the movie have been if it had been Hank that... managed to screw up by shrinking down too far and not being able to go back, and Janet was the one who survived?
Kind of, yeah. There's the thing again. There aren't enough women in this movie. Like, the two guys besides Michael Pena, the black guy and the Russian guy, either one of them could have been a woman easily with no change at all.
This is true.
And that also would have made the movie pass the Bechdel test. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Bechdel.
Yeah, of course, if they do go that route, I kind of just want Paul Rudd to have some line about how, you know, no woman that attractive could ever be married to Hank Pym.
Yeah.
So, and because of that, he sort of, you know, he doesn't want his daughter to go along and, you know.
I didn't want to lose you too, or some similarly over-dramatic, sappy line like that. Which it works for the emotional arc of the movie.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a shame that the emotional arc of the movie involves... just the gender breakdown that it does.
Well,
I mean, I think so it's less that it's the gender breakdown. Presumably it would be the same if Pym had a son.
Yeah, it's a father.
It would, yeah.
It's a child. You want to protect your child and make the world better for your child.
The most stereotypical version of that is father-daughter, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I let it slide because the movie's fun and funny.
So around this time, Darren Cross pays a visit to the Pym household and kind of has an idea of what's going on, but doesn't let on. And also because, Hope is there, doesn't murder Hank Pym.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't know Hope is there.
He knows Hope is there. That's why he
does know
Hank.
She was there.
He did. Oh. I guess I messed up when it was revealed later. Whatever.
Yeah, he says, you know, I was coming there to kill him, but you were there, and I didn't want to do that in front of you.
Oh.
Because he kind of, you know, obviously evil, but he's a little considerate.
Yeah, he isn't the best Marvel villain. Of course, that's still Loki. But he's a more human villain than most of the other Marvel movies have had.
And they explain him going evil by, if you don't have the right helmet to protect yourself, the Pym particles make you go crazy.
Yes. Although even now, apparently there's some sort of side effect to the Pym particles because Pym can't use them himself.
Yeah, that needed like another line or two why. Like,
yeah.
Like I'd had an aneurysm after I grew back up one time or something. So
right, or my spine would explode or something.
Yeah, just one little bit. He just says, I can't do it anymore. It's like, why? Some explanation. It's like my head will explode. I can't do it anymore. I already had an accident, something.
Yeah. So I mean, we've...
Even if you walked with a cane, that would be enough to justify it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we do see him with a bottle of pills for something.
Maybe.
Like when he ends up going to this unveiling ceremony and he checks in his stuff, and among his personal effects is a bottle of pills.
And another thing that we first see when Rudd breaks into the house, a keychain with a little tank on it.
Yes.
It's
we see it earlier than that. We see it when he's going back to the Pym building for the first time.
Oh, yeah, at the very beginning.
I think so, yes.
See
it, he's like, got his car keys. Because he's kind of got a neat little convertible.
And he smugly goes, well, will that painting on the wall of me work as ID?
That was a very Venture Brothers line.
Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, although in Venture Brothers, the answer would have been, no, sir, we still need to see ID.
That guy looks way younger. Who are you? And notably, the Pym household does have a lot of little mini, sort of what appear to be miniatures in it.
Yeah, he's got like a little car on an ottoman. He's got the little keychain, lots of various other things. Of course, obviously, it's spoiler. Although, with spoilers, the tank is actually a real tank.
Yes.
But I didn't realize it till the second time I saw it. Well, actually, the first time I saw it, I figured, oh, Paul Rudd is later going to turn that into a big tank and use it as a prop. I didn't realize, oh, wait, that's actually going to be a real tank until the second time I saw it.
It's not a keychain.
Yes.
But it is.
They set that up earlier in the movie, too, without spoiling it, because they show them putting the equipment on the ants that actually makes them respond to the stuff by taking the equipment and shrinking it before putting it on the ants.
Yeah, miniaturizing the old-fashioned way.
I think we kind of skipped that whole training montage.
Yeah, I mean, there are, cool. You know, we touched on them. Yeah. There are a ton of montages where he's learned to work with ants, he's learned to fight.
Well, it's kind of hard to talk through a montage. It's like,
it is, but I wanted to give him credit because those were really
cool stuff
good
happens.
Images.
There's some good visual gags. Like exploding underground three times in a row.
But before he can do this, he has to get a little piece of communication equipment from an old Stark warehouse up in upstate New York. This should be a piece of cake, but unfortunately it's the same Stark building that has since been converted into the Avengers compound.
Oh, which reminds me of going back to it. Okay, we're spoiling a joke, but the first earlier when Pym is first explaining to Lang about all these problems, it's like Rudd just says, "Well, why don't we call the Avengers?"
Yeah, I mean that is kind of that's kind of the question that everybody kind of wonders about in these Marvel movies.
Yeah, it's nice that this is the first Marvel movie that kind of really felt like a Marvel comic book, because it had those little references more than anything else. Like, it, even more than the Avengers movies, because the Avengers movies is like, everybody piled together, it's one big action thing. This, you can actually feel more of the footprints of the greater Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in this case, they don't call the Avengers because Pym he doesn't trust, he didn't like Howard Stark, and he probably knew Tony Stark as like a jerk kid, so.
Yeah.
He doesn't want him getting them anywhere near the Ant-Man suit.
Although, frankly, he's probably right about Tony as well.
Yeah, kind of. A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the last time they let him tinker around with stuff, he created an evil James Spader.
Yeah, I mean, creating a neutral James Spader is dangerous enough, but...
That's true.
Yeah, he even mentions the crushing a town in whatever.
Yeah, dropping cities.
Yeah, they're busy dropping cities on people or something.
Yeah. Anyway, spoilers. It's an Avengers compound now. It's not a Disney
facility. Because this is kind of like a comic book, we get a guest appearance, and it's the Falcon.
Yay!
And we get a really fun fight sequence that unfortunately makes the Falcon look a little bit incompetent.
No, actually, he comes off pretty good. He's just unprepared for a guy shrinking down and breaking the jetpack.
I mean, how do you fight a tiny man?
He could actually see the tiny man most of the time. Those are good goggles.
Yeah.
So he was tracking them. He just, when a tiny man crawls on your back, you're kind of at a loss.
Especially when your back contains, you know, kind of your superpower.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I managed to remain totally unspoiled for this. I'd heard that there was an Avenger in the movie, but I didn't know which one.
Yeah,
I hadn't even heard that.
I kind of assumed it was going to be Hawkeye.
I think I was spoiled, but I'd completely forgotten it by the time I got to the movie. And then, oh, yeah, it was a fun scene, so I didn't really care.
Yeah, and I really liked Anthony Mackie in Captain America, so I'm glad that he got to be in this one, too.
Yeah. It was super fun seeing him.
So they've got this device. They're ready to hit the compound, which is good because his cross has finally perfected it after doing horrible things to a number of adorable lambs.
Yeah, yep. Lambs? Why? I mean, I guess
the guy really likes Jurassic Park.
Rabbits? Kind of. Yeah, it's like.
I mean, lambs are kind of closer to human size than rabbits, I guess.
I guess if you're going for scale, but.
They also did choose a lamb for the first cloning project.
That's true.
Yeah. It seems like a bigger animal when you could start with a rabbit, although I guess if you shrink a rabbit, it's going to disappear quicker.
You're going to lose it.
Yeah.
It'll jump away, especially...
Mine's kind of the perfect size, you know? Pigs are too messy, cows are too big.
Yeah, he really should have had a fainting sheep. That would have been better. It's like, it shrinks, it gets surprised, it falls over. Because with a rabbit, because... When Ant-Man shrinks down, he still has the proportional strength of a human or more, and he's super dense. So a punch could kill someone.
Yes.
But so, okay, it does kind of make sense that you wouldn't want to do that with a rabbit, because the first time it jumps, it's gone.
Yes.
It's breaking through walls. Yep.
And then, you know, imagine you've got two of them, and then you've just got, like, an infestation in your building of ant-sized rabbits.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that would be horrible. But yeah, the until they perfect it, it turns everything it hits into like a ball of pink, well, snot.
Yep.
Yeah, like,
which I don't know why he wasn't selling that as a weapon.
Maybe it's just too expensive, but it's a really good assassination tool because whoever you're going to kill just vanishes. You wipe them up with a tissue. There's no evidence.
Also, another example of Scott Lang is a jerk. Was at the end of that whole fight sequence where he gets the MacGuffin. He doesn't tell Scott that he got the MacGuffin. Scott's pissed the entire time he's on his way back and chews him out when he gets back. And then he responds to the chewing out by just dropping the thing on the desk. There's no justification for doing that.
No.
There is. I like Paul Rudd.
Well, unless he didn't take that plane back. Maybe he had to take, like, the Greyhound back. Like Amtrak.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. Kind of a, you jerk, I'm going to make you sweat a while for making me sit in this public transit hellhole.
That's right. Anyway, they need a little more manpower for this, so they bring in Lang's crew, who are introduced somewhat shockingly to the Ant-Man power.
Yeah,
it was also a funny scene.
Freak out. It's quite entertaining.
Luis totally freaks out. The Russian guy insists that it must be the work of gypsies.
Which felt racist, question mark?
Yeah.
Against Russians?
Kind of.
Against gypsies.
I don't mean, that guy seems like the kind of guy who would use the word gypsies.
Yeah, probably. Because he's basically a Dracula without a tracksuit.
I can't remember if he calls anybody bro at this during the course of the movie, but it's entirely possible.
I'm pretty sure he does.
Okay, he is those guys from Hawkeye.
I wouldn't bet money on it, but I'm pretty sure one of the crews is bro at some point.
If he shows up in Civil War, that guy needs to antagonize Hawkeye.
You're in the tracksuit, yes.
Hey, seriously, bro, it is the Hawk guy.
Oh, that would be great.
I mean, I'm kind of disappointed that in Age of Ultron, he has, like, a wife and kids, so he can't really just be, like, Matt Fraction Hawkeye.
Yeah, he can't be in a little apartment being goofy with a pizza dog.
So anyway, the crew is in on this. They've got the van parked outside, and this big opening is going on. Pym is there. Hope is there. And Lang is infiltrating the building via Ant.
Yeah, and oh, shoot, the cop is there, of course.
Yes, the cop and his partner, who was on The Wire.
Oh.
I forgot to mention him, but yes, he's in it as well.
They almost blow it by trying to arrest Hank.
Yes.
Wanted for questioning in connection with the disappearance of Scott Lang.
Uh-huh.
Because Hank did not think that through.
Nope. Maybe should have worn a disguise or something. Yeah. Or sunglasses, at least.
A wig. Maybe he should have shaved after he got out.
Or worn a bigger fake beard.
Done the thing that wizards in Discworld do where they put wires in their beard to make it look like a fake beard. Yeah.
This heist mostly goes off with a few hitches.
Yep.
It's hard to just describe it in a textual medium, especially since I wasn't taking notes in the theater. Yeah. But it's very amusing.
It's a basic, good heist. Some things go wrong. They have to improvise, but not much.
Louise infiltrates the building as a security guard and has to punch a couple of guys.
And of course,
he's
them out on one hit.
Really nice at the end. He remembers to take them out of the building.
Yeah, yes. That's a nice callback.
It's like, and then they steal the cop's car and drive it into a tree when it looks like they're about to arrest Hank. And then they accidentally get noticed as those guys that Scott was friends with because they accidentally hit the horn on the van and it still plays La Cucaracha.
Because of course it does.
And he's ready to sell this suit to Mitchell Carson, and Mitchell Carson is, as it turns out, with Hydra.
Yeah.
Yes, of course he is.
Because every S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who is a jerk was actually secretly evil.
Working for Hydra.
Yep.
Nick Fury wasn't.
Well, that's true. I mean, he wasn't so much a jerk as he just was Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
And I didn't notice this, but people have pointed out subsequently that one of the Hydra guys has a 10 rings neck tattoo, which is a neat Iron Man callback.
Oh.
Interesting.
Hank gets shot. Lang gets trapped by Cross.
Yeah, they take the yellow jacket suit out of the thing just as Scott gets into the chamber.
Yep.
And then taunt him.
Oh, yeah, that's the point where Cross reveals, oh, yeah, I knew all along you were breaking in here, yada, yada, yada.
But I'm now going to sell the Ant-Man suit, too.
Yep. But this stuff doesn't run on just clean air and good thoughts, so you're going to be beholden to me for the fuel.
Yep. Give away the razor, gouge him on the blades.
Which, is that actually, are razors that expensive?
Yeah.
They're fairly expensive, yeah.
It's well known in business and marketing circles that the whole model is charge a bunch for the razors and give the handles away, like, literally for free. They'll send you one on your 18th birthday kind of thing.
But don't you, like, when you get the handle, don't you get a blade with it at least?
Yeah, but those wear out.
Well, you just keep getting that. This is why I use electric, because I don't give a shit.
It's like $10 for the handle or $9 for 4 cartridges.
Yeah.
And the handle comes with like one blade.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I use, not Dollar Shave Club, but there's a company called Dorco that sells the Dollar Shave Club guys, the ones that they sell to people, and I get like a $30 pack of some disposable and some cartridge razors that lasts me like 3 years.
Well, it wouldn't be a podcast unless we were shilling some sort of discount razor blades.
Yeah, they're all doing it now.
Yep.
Next, I think we're going to talk about Squarespace and possibly an open source dildo.
No. Speaking of which, you guys like podcasts. How do you feel about audiobooks?
There was enough product placement in this movie that I mostly didn't notice. It's impossible.
This is also where I point out that Corey Stahl kind of looks like a handsomer Paul Scheer.
I can see that. He'd be good for Paul Scheer in the biopic.
Yes. Of course, that means they'd have to cast like a ridiculously good-looking actress as June Diane Raphael to make him look like Paul Scheer next to her.
Yeah. Wait, Paul Scheer.
Anyway, so the Lang gets out. He has an amusing fight scene with these Hydra agents. You know, he's running up guns, he's punching guys. Although Mitch Carson gets away with a vial of the Pym particles, I assume probably to turn up on season 3 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That sounds plausible.
Yeah.
Also, we have the destruction of, what is this, a building for ants?
Oh, that is exactly what I was thinking of during this scene, where he's got a bunch of, you know, the little architectural models.
Yeah.
And, Lang is running around them like they're full-sized, and, yeah, this should be at least 2 times larger.
That was cute. It's like they managed to have building mass destruction without actually destroying any buildings or killing any people.
Yes.
Well,
was
up till this point in the movie, yeah.
God, yeah. There's one noticeable death, but
so yeah, Cross escapes via helicopter. Lang pursues him, and meanwhile, all those charges they planted to destroy these servers are about to blow with Hope and Pym still in the building. And Pym is not really going anywhere because he's got a bullet in him.
Yeah.
But luckily, he's got that keychain with him. And surprise, that tank turns into a full-size tank and they drive out of the building.
Yeah, I knew it was coming. I didn't know it was going to... I figured Scott Lang was going to use it, not Pym.
Mm-hmm.
In a fight, but it's like, just pop. The tank comes out of the building, out of the window on like a fifth floor, and just crashes to the ground.
Yes.
With the keychain still attached.
Yes.
That was the best part.
And then the building, I guess, shrinks into oblivion.
Yep.
Yeah, it
implodes.
That, crap.
Hmm?
The ghost movie with Poltergeist.
Oh, Poltergeist. Oh, yeah, it is like
that. Oh, yeah, it does look totally like that.
Admittedly, actually, I first thought of the Hole in the Wall Gang episode of The Real Ghostbusters, but that's in itself is a reference to Poltergeist. The building just explodes. Yep. Which Cross did not see coming, and oh, the look on his face. It's like,
it was never just a heist, and then he's so pissed that he puts on the yellow jacket suit and starts trying to beat up Scott.
Yeah, oh, yes. We forgot one part, and the most important death in the movie.
Oh, right, his...
Anthony.
Lang's pet aunt, Antony.
Yes, the little flying ant who'd carried Lang at the beginning from the escape from the police department in the first place, he'd named Antony because Pym just called it, like, Ant 2...
217 or something like that.
Yeah.
So he actually...
They just have numbers, Scott. There are a lot of ants.
So it's the only named ant in the movie, and then she gets hit by a bullet, and a bullet impacting an ant. There was nothing left but a wing, and
yeah,
this movie makes you sad about an ant dying.
They linger on it falling for so long, too.
Yeah, it's like they were pulling at the heartstrings. I didn't actually cry, but... You almost got me, guys.
A little misty.
No, I'll be sad for a tree, not an ant. I haven't stepped on any ants since, but...
It seemed like a bit too much to me, like they were trying too hard.
I'm not sure how much of that was. I think it was maybe a little tongue-in-cheek?
Yes, it was a little bit heartstring, a little bit... Because the wind was falling for so long, that's the joke.
Yeah, I mean... I think that's kind of the best example of how schizophrenic this movie kind of is.
Yeah,
never 100% sure whether they meant it as a joke or not for that.
Mm-hmm.
But it still works because of the moment. It's like there's, what, four or five writers?
Yeah.
Because, like, there's Edgar Wright, isn't Paul Rudd even listed?
Yeah, Paul Rudd is credited, Edgar Wright, Joe Cornish, and Adam McKay.
Yeah, so when you see that many writers, there are problems, yet this movie still manages to remain really coherent despite that. But there are a few odd bits of tone, but it works because most of it is a comedy that, like that, it goes so far it has to be a joke, in a way. Mm-hmm. So you get the edit.
I don't trust them enough to say that it was definitely a joke, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It kind of ends up being both.
Okay.
Anyway, I can
settle for that.
Yeah, Cross his yellow jacket now. He gets a little careless with his lasers, and it kind of shoots up everybody flying this helicopter.
Yeah.
He and Lang end up in a briefcase, fighting as it plummets to Earth.
throwing lifesavers at each other and bouncing off of the home button on an iPhone so they trigger Siri, and based on the banter, she plays soundtrack for it.
Yeah, she plays, what is it?
Disintegration.
I'm going to disintegrate you. Playing Disintegration by The Cure.
I tried that with Siri. Did not work.
That I think that was the biggest laugh for me, because I wasn't expecting that.
And that was kind of a very Edgar Wrighty touch.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was. I mean, everything from the fight sequence blocking to the diegetic music to that kind of a joke to kick off an action sequence is perfect.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, they end up in a suburban pool, and Lang ping-pong paddles Yellowjacket into a bug zap.
Which, I'm not sure that even should have worked by the rules of shrinking, but it was funny.
Yep. Yeah. It was.
And
great.
Then he gets arrested.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems like we're kind of at the end of the movie, but no, that bug zapper did not entirely kill him. So he's back, and he's super crazy. So he goes after Lang's daughter.
Yeah, because he's been shrinking and growing at this point quite a few times, and he's been exposed to the particles even before that, hanging out around the goats and crap. And then he doesn't actually get hit by the bug zapper, but he's close enough that his suit starts to spark and arc. So,
yeah, I mean, the next time we see it, it's clearly like kind of scorched.
Yeah. So
So his brain may be a little fried in there, too.
Yeah, but he's smart enough to go on a murder rampage, or try to.
Yes, tries to. I think the only guys he actually succeeds in killing are the guys in that helicopter, who he was not trying to kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. He kills the two pilots. Wasn't there another guy in there that gets knocked out? Does Lang do that, or does...
I'm pretty sure Yellowjacket accidentally killed that guy, too.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I think he shoots him.
I think he lasered him.
No, I thought he... shot him before he got it out of the...
Oh, I think you're right. You're right.
Yeah. So he does have a kill count. But anyway.
Yes. So yeah, there's a very entertaining fight sequence involving Cassie's Thomas the Tank Engine set.
Oh, so fun.
Yes.
Lots of destroy... Oh, that... I'm not sure if it's the best use of 3D, but it's the best use of showing the tiny fight scale and then pulling out to what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a couple times in that show?
I know that. You're there, it's making full-size train noises.
Yeah.
And then you cut away and it's just sort of, putting along.
Yeah, and of course, the main part...
Oh, God, I'm going to get run over by a train and then just cut back. You've seen it in the trailer. The train just falls off the tracks.
Yeah. Yes. It doesn't really hurt him, but it's one of the...
And in the course of this, we also end up with an ant getting giant-sized and the... Thomas the Tank Engine himself getting giant size.
Oh, yeah, because him actually has, little shurikens that can shrink and grow things.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Because that isn't Chekhov's gun for anything that we'll be seeing in a few moments.
Well, unlike the tank, that actually does keep getting used to shrink and grow things.
Yeah.
But it will...
Yeah, but it's been throwaways up until now, though.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Because his aim isn't very good.
Who's got the dog there?
That's me, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's a deal.
Yep.
A little bit of background noise is okay, as long as we're powering. Yes, good dog.
So, to defeat Cross, Lang has to do the one thing that he was really not supposed to do. It's the Cross the Streams moment.
Yeah.
And he shrinks down to subatomic size, sabotages Cross's suit, who ends up shrinking unevenly, which looks horrifying.
Yeah,
that's
gloriously horribly one piece at a time.
Like his arm is sort of shrinking into his body.
Yeah.
And I assume that instead of getting sucked into the microverse, there's just nothing of him left.
No, it's, no. Like, we can make an argument that villains in some of the other movies, like Red Skull, just got sucked up into who knows what. We didn't see him crunch down or disassemble piece by piece. Cross is so dead.
What happened to him is a slower version of what he did to that guy in the bathroom at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
Basically. Oh. And unfortunately, Lang ends up shrinking uncontrollably into what appears to be the microverse.
Yeah. In the process, it's a nice thing, atom by atom, as he gets smaller and smaller. And at one point, we see a shadow, which is kind of obviously the Wasp.
Could be the Wasp. Some people are speculating it's Eternity. Because it's kind of a figure made of stars.
Yeah, but
yeah. It's Rom Space Knight.
That'd be nice, but it's like there's a wing outline you can see.
Yeah.
Unless Eternity has wings? No.
No, it's probably...
But he keeps going way beyond that, past quantum level to weird 3D folding stuff, which is
weird. Weird Tesseract stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like this end of 2001. It's really well done.
Only shorter and
like
less
the
confusing.
End of Cube 3 Hypercube.
Yes.
Also, the sequence does not make sense to me for one very petty reason that's kind of, okay, yeah, the sequence had to be like this so the plot could work, but grrr.
But what?
If they're shrinking down to subatomic to be able to get through a material, aren't they too small to interact with anything once they get past it? And if they're not too small, that means they're big enough that they're not going subatomic.
Yeah, he did. He had to have gotten beyond subatomic and then big enough again to punch microchips and things inside the yellow jacket suit. But it's
I think initially he didn't quite go subatomic. He just went small enough to slip in like the tiny, tiny cracks.
Yeah. There we go. That's good enough.
Those tiny, tiny cracks in the welded titanium.
Right.
I'm sorry. Yay, MacGuffins.
Well, yeah. Also, it kind of bends the pin particles are supposed to shrink the distance between atoms anyway, and he goes beyond subatomic, so he's shrinking his atoms beyond the size of an atom, not just closer together. So,
I guess that does make sense for why it would be kind of weird. But
it's magic science at this point. He's just
complain too much about it. It's just grr. Order of operations, you guys.
Anyway, luckily, Lang does have these, shurikens, manages to, get his suit working with them again, and he re-enlarges into the real world.
Hooray, the day is saved. Thanks to fiddling with your belt.
Yes. Yep. And,
the day was saved before then. He just didn't die because of fiddling with his belt.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So he survived his future, his ex-wife's future cop husband manages to cover for him by sort of writing it off as like a paperwork error.
Yep. Yeah. And they enjoy their new pet ant.
Yes, which is horrifying.
Yeah. It's the size of a dog, and now it's treated like a dog.
Get that. Don't leave that in your house, good lord.
There's only one of them. One.
Still. I guess it is sterile, so you don't worry about having horrible ant puppies.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a giant queen. It's just a worker woman.
And I'd... Honestly, and Chris then, was like, we'll make it a yard pet, but that would probably be worse.
People are calling the cops.
Yes.
So we... at this point, he hears from Louise again, who has got another tip for him. And in this case, the Falcon is looking for him.
Yeah, in another nested story where he's like, this is the art gallery one where.
Yep.
My friend told me about this guy who told me about, or this girl who told me about the bartender who was Stan Lee, who told me about the Falcon, who was asking for something. Wait, what?
There was a guy who can shrink?
A guy. I know a lot of guys. I know a guy who can crawl up down walls. I know a guy who swings. I know. Okay, we get it. It's Spider-Man.
Yeah,
that's right.
You've heard of Spider-Man.
MCU Spider-Man reference.
Yay.
But, hey, and that's where the movie ends. But it's a Marvel movie, so that means credit scenes. And there are two.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through the credits, Pym's got a new Wasp suit to show to Hope.
Yeah.
Which responds, it's about time.
Yeah, but Pym's basement, where he had the safe, is multi-layered. Because, the safe was the giveaway. That was the gimme. It had the suit in it. But there's a slide-away wall where his lab was for all the stuff he actually did that Rudd didn't find. Or Lang didn't find.
I mean, that wouldn't, no point for that. I mean, Rudd would find that, I can't really wear this. Clearly for a lady.
Well, no, I was trying to say he has three layers of safe.
Oh, yes.
Because there's the safe with the suit. Four. Oh, yeah, I guess there's four. There's a safe with the suit.
Fingerprint layer, safe layer, lab layer, lab safe for new suit layer.
Yeah, new suit he built like 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
For his wife.
Will finally give it to his daughter.
Yeah, and as we say, about damn time. And he was like, finally! Could have given it to her for the final fight sequence, but no.
Yeah. Also, Hope and Scott make out at one point, because of course they do.
Yeah.
Well, how could she not? He's Paul Rudd.
They both have.
How could she? He's Scott Lang.
I guess, but he's Paul Rudd. Come on.
She's an elf. Anyway, so the rest of the credits happen, and then we have at the very end of the movie.
This is a scene apparently directly from Captain America: Civil War.
Oh, okay.
You know, Cap and the Falcon have the Winter Soldier. He's they've got him chained to a pipe or something.
Yeah, it's really dark, so it was hard to tell who was doing. Like, I had to assume it was the Winter Soldier because he was like. He had, like, his metal arm in a vise, but you couldn't really see the arm. At least I think it was a vise. And his hair was over his face, so I couldn't tell who the hell it was. I just had to assume it was the Winter Soldier by context clues. And they need a guy.
Yes. They can't talk to Tony Stark, for some reason, because of the Accords.
Because he's a jerk.
And so, luckily the Falcon knows a guy. Ant-Man will return.
Yay.
And so, you know, overall, it's a movie I enjoyed a lot.
Yes, it's very fun.
I think I liked Age of Ultron, but I think I had more fun watching this.
Yeah, Age of
Ultron. I'd agree with that. It had a better balance to it.
Yeah, I want to go back and watch Age of Ultron again at some point. Well, of course.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed Age of Ultron, but...
But it has faded from memory quicker than some other Marvel movies, although that might be partially because... Like the week after that, Mad Max Fury Road came out, and that was
awesome. Yes.
that kind of overshadowed. Amazing.
And also because there's a ridiculous amount of stuff going on in that movie.
Yeah. But
I'd Ant-Man, give this one credit over it just because...
It's fun.
This was paced well, and Avengers fell into the same trap that every blockbuster seems to fall into this day and age of, oh, what's the end of the movie going to be? Oh, it's going to be a one-third of the movie action sequence that's taking place in a monochromatic environment where everything is horrible and everyone dies.
Yeah, this movie managed to be...
Although, I do appreciate the extent to which Age of Ultron insisted that not that many people would die.
That was good, yeah. I appreciate the Avengers movies going out of their way to do that.
Yeah, we're trying to save people besides just beating up the villain.
I'm sorry, I've got to go for...
Damage control.
I've got to go for just a sec. I'll be right back.
Anywho, what were you saying?
What we were talking about. I guess, you know, the just overall, you know, it's an enjoyable movie. I think it hangs together a little better than Ultron, despite its troubled birthing process.
It's shorter, isn't it?
It's shorter, yeah. I mean, it's a slim 2 hours.
Yeah. And, like, the original cut of Avengers 2 was, like, 5 hours or something crazy.
Oh, yeah. Maybe,
like, 3 hours. It was super long.
Something ridiculous.
I mean, and I'm curious as to how much of that was just kind of hanging out at the Hawkeye farm.
Which, admittedly, we want more hanging out scenes, but, you know.
Sure, I don't know how much I want to hang out at the Hawkeye farm.
And stuff that was expanded.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Thor dream sequence that made no goddamn sense and we didn't care. Which is
well, it'll make sense when you see Thor Ragnarok in theaters.
Yep.
Yeah, that's an example of where the Marvel Universe tie-in felt intrusive.
Yeah, a little, yeah. In this, it was really just the end credit scene, which, you know, if you're staying to the end, you're kind of buying into that anyway.
Well, yeah, there was that. There was attacking the Avengers base. There was the mention of the Avengers. Mention of a web-slinging guy.
You could have cut the entire Avengers sequence and not lost a thing, but it was good pacing-wise.
Yeah.
And, you know, which you is kind of the thing I want to get an about. Action scene midway through your movie.
That, yeah, it kind of needed an action scene of some kind at that point, other than just a heist breaking in.
It needed an action scene, and it needed Scott Lang proving himself before going into the final action sequence.
Yes. So we can kind of believe him fighting off this laser-shooting insect man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Edgar Wright being involved from the beginning helped give it the architecture it needed to actually be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you could still feel his touch there, but I wonder what caused him to leave? I can't... really think of anything in this movie that felt so wrong that the studio wanted, but he didn't, unless it was just the Falcon bit? Unless he
had
any ties to the other Marvel movies as much?
It might have been he wanted to, I don't even know what it would have been different, but maybe he wanted to make it more of an explicit parody of the Marvel movie structure.
Maybe.
And they made him pull it back.
Although apparently this has more of hope than the Edgar Wright version did.
Which, that's better, and she's kind of sidelined, which, the movie is so much fun, I'll forgive a lot of it, because There's action, there's comedy, it's what I want in a Marvel movie. It's not as good as Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's in the same vein to me.
Yeah,
But Hope,
it's the same scope as Guardians of the Galaxy, which is, I think, what makes it work.
Yeah, but Hope gets pushed to the side so she can come back in a sequel where hopefully it's called Wasp and Ant-Man.
There's no way this is getting a sequel.
You don't think?
It doesn't need a sequel, but I could live with a sequel.
I mean,
were low, but they didn't get enough money for it. And if they do get a sequel, it's not coming until at least 2020.
I can live with that.
I figure as far as this is concerned, this is getting more characters on the table for Civil War and Avengers 2. Avengers 3 Part 1 and 3 Part 2.
Yeah, mostly. But they're enjoyable enough characters that I'd like to come back to them again at some point.
Yeah, I want to see them again. I just don't think they need to.
Yeah, because
what's the hook for the second one? I mean, I'm sorry if I'm being pessimistic, but...
There's so many great Ant-Man villains they could use.
Well, okay, the villains...
Egghead, the magician, the porcupine...
Okay, it's...
the human top.
You make it more about exploration. Either they're just trying to find Wasp and get lost in the microverse for a while and have fun there, or... Okay, really, that's pretty much it. I want the microverse. Or
maybe subplot that takes them out of Avengers 3 Part 1 and brings them back at a critical moment in Avengers 3 Part 2.
See, that would work.
Or maybe they get saddled with a douchey S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Eric O'Grady.
I would love to see Eric O'Grady show up again.
For the uninitiated, he's the irredeemable Ant-Man, who is Ant-Man if he was a deeply unethical bro.
Oh. Well, that doesn't sound fun.
I mean, at one point in his solo series, he nearly has sex with his dead best friend's girlfriend atop said best friend's grave.
Oh, that was him. I always assumed that was a DC scene.
No.
I've seen that panel. It's like, ew. Damn it, DC. But it was Marvel. Whoops.
I mean, he's supposed to be horrible. That's why he's the irredeemable Ant-Man.
He's Hank Pym crossed with Scott Lang.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the thing. Movie Hank Pym is way better than comic book Hank Pym. I like him.
And he was still enough of a jerk to still seem like Hank Pym.
Yeah. Yes. But his jerk...
And they managed to do it without using the one defining character moment that everyone hates.
I was really worried when they started implying stuff about what had happened to Jen. I thought, oh, no. See, that's not what happened, is it?
I don't even read the many comics about... I've only read Avengers AI, really, with Hank Pym in it. So I didn't even think about that when I was in the theater. It's like, oh, she's just gone. She died in some accident. Oh, and she did, kind of, saving the world. So I didn't see that coming, so I like it. He's angry because of what happened to his wife. And he kept it inside, which is why he wouldn't let his daughter go out. He had to pen everything up inside him. He couldn't even tell her until, like, midway through the movie. Which was an emotional scene that got ruined by Scott Lang.
So he's still a controlling jerk, which basically means...
Yeah.
Oh, God, Tony Stark could have been Darren Cross in this movie if things had gone differently.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Oh, ooh, that... yeah. Maybe that's what Edgar Wright wanted. The villain is Iron Man.
No, that's the next movie.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Oh, yeah, that's going to work really well, because Pym will hate him and tell Lang, no, you can't play with Iron Man. It's like, okay, I got to play with Captain America? Okay, fine. I'll shrink down and then grow and punch him, whatever.
Really, he was kind of the villain of the Avengers 2, too.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he may very well be the villain of Captain America Civil War.
I think he... Isn't that kind of the way he has to be? Because isn't Captain America basically... Well, it's Captain America's movie, so he has to be the hero.
Well, unless it turns out, you know, that we have to put aside our differences and team up to fight, I guess, Baron Zemo, because he's in that movie.
Well, yeah, there's going to be somebody else to punch other than just Cap and Iron Man punching each other at the end of the movie. That'll be the middle of the movie.
Honestly, I just want them to get the Fantastic Four back, not to do a Fantastic Four movie, but so they can use Doctor Doom in Avengers.
Yes, I would like... At some point during my lifespan, I would like to see a decent movie with Dr. Doom in it.
Yeah, which is not happening next
year. So far, they are 0-2, and I suspect in about a month, we'll be 0-3.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I'd also settle for a Spider-Man Human Torch team-up movie.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I mean, there are some decent aspects of those other Fantastic Four movies. I think Michael Chiklis is good in them, and I think he was the Thing, and I think Chris Evans is good.
Yeah, Chris Evans was good as Johnny Storm. He's better as Captain America, but he was good as Johnny Storm.
But, oh man, those movies have a really terrible Doctor Doom.
They have a terrible Doctor Doom, they have a forgettable Reed Richards, and they have a appropriately named Invisible Woman.
Yeah. I mean, I could even accept, you know, I could accept those two as Reed and Sue if they had any sort of chemistry together, but they don't.
No. And this new movie, we got more movies on the horizon.
I don't know if I'm
just doing an adaptation theater of Marvel Annual 2-in-1 number 7. Which Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 7.
Which one is that again?
That is the one where the Thing fights the Champion.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's the problem. They don't get enough Thing, and now the Thing's going to be naked.
Yep. That is upsetting.
Although I still have a good adaptation of that, so I can be happy.
It's true. I guess the question is, what pro wrestler do you cast as the Champion?
Oh, the Macho Man's gone, so...
Yeah, Macho Man's gone, Hulk Hogan's a racist.
The Rock?
Yeah, until recently, I think they might have done Hogan, but not anymore.
Oh, yeah, not today, no. The Rock. You kind of have to go with The Rock.
He's already going to be in that Shazam movie.
Oh, shit, yeah. Yep.
How about John Cena?
He's a good guy.
He's in that train wreck.
They wouldn't let him be an antagonist.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, by the time that movie comes out, he might have made a heel turn.
No, he won't.
He hasn't made a heel turn in like 15 years.
Oh.
That's hyperbole. It's been 9.
It's still way longer than anybody else.
Yeah. They're not turning him heel. He's their bread and butter merchandise seller and their number one Make-A-Wish guy.
Yeah. I don't know any other...
Brock Lesnar. Although he can't really talk and he sounds... Not like Macho Man, interestingly weird. He sounds incongruous weird.
Yeah, that's
like that voice should not be coming out of that monster.
it's the Mike Tyson effect.
You need a guy with a good voice because they probably do it half CG or all CG anyway.
CM Punk doesn't have the build for it.
Well, again, if you're just using the voice. Maybe.
If you're just using the voice, but if you're casting a wrestler, you're using the look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do what they do with Batista's Drax.
Batista would be perfect.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's taken.
True.
I mean, I thought he was surprisingly good at Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, he's a better actor than he is a wrestler.
When he got cast, he went out and like did 3 months of like day job is acting classes.
Wow.
He's become a good actor.
Yeah, he's going to be in the new James Bond movie, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Oh, yeah. Ant-Man was good. Hopefully we'll see him as Giant Man in Civil War, maybe?
I could see that, as long as hopefully the same thing doesn't happen to him that happened to Goliath in Civil War.
Oh.
I mean, it won't be as offensive because he's a white guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that... I mean...
Although, hey, that next Thor movie is called Ragnarok. Maybe it's a double meaning, where it's, you know, the end of the world, and also he has to fight a cyborg Thor.
Would Tony actually build a cyborg Thor since he was arguing about robots picking up hammers at the end of Avengers?
He'd
want to build another one that could pick it up just to prove that he could.
He really should have learned his robot lesson here.
Hey, I built another robot. I promise it won't kill anybody. Oh, shit, the ant guy's dead. Oh, crap. Okay.
I mean, you got lucky the one time with Paul Bettany, but don't push your luck, Tony.
Yeah.
Hear me out. Paul Rudd does do the Giant Man thing. Almost what happened to Goliath in Civil War happens to him, but instead of being outright dead, he's in a wheelchair. And that wheelchair gets pushed down a cliff, and the brakes on the wheelchair aren't working, so he goes over the cliff and plunges into the lake before Mac pops up and looks around.
No, damn it.
Damn you, Paul Rudd.
Damn it, Paul Rudd.
The great thing is this time he did it twice on Conan.
Oh, yeah.
Twice? Oh.
And they inserted footage from Ant-Man into it, so it linked between the two clips.
Yes.
I got a message from the Great Lakes Avengers. They offered me a membership, but I did not accept it. They're a walking disaster.
All right. So, I think in that case, I believe it's time for us to move on to the appendectomy.
Oh, how I have missed the appendectomy.
In which we take a lesser-known Marvel character from the depths of the Marvel Appendix website, and we see what can be done with them. And in this case, it's a special Ant-Man movie edition, because it's Darren Cross, the very villain of the movie we just watched, who had, until this movie came out, or until, I guess, fairly recently, two comics appearances to his name, which has to be a comics villain record.
Well, that's it?
Using two issues of Marvel Premiere in 1979.
Wow, he's the most obscure Marvel character to be in a movie.
I don't know the most.
He's probably the most obscure to have a major role.
Yeah, like the most obscure to certainly be on the poster.
Yes.
I mean, that reporter who Olivia Munn plays in Iron Man 2 appeared for like one panel.
Oh, I've forgotten so much about Iron Man 2.
Yeah, she has like one line. It's kind of weird. I mean, I guess she wasn't as big at the time, but it's still weird. Anyway, so in this case, Darren Cross never really worked for... He just had his own company. He was never really connected to Hank Pym at all. Hmm. And also, he has the awesome middle name of Agonistes.
Agonistes?
Agonistes?
I would guess it's Greek.
Yeah, it's Greek.
Agonistes.
And yeah, he was a self-made man. He made his own company, Cross Technological Enterprises. But he also had a heart condition, so he had to get an experimental pacemaker to save his life, which had the unfortunate side effect of turning him into a big, magenta, lumpy dude.
Yeah, it's kind of a...
Oh, God, it's Richard Nixon if Richard Nixon was radiated with gamma rays.
God.
You're making me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Oh, that is horrifying. And so, you know, because he's gigantic, his heart wouldn't support his body, so he had to go out and steal a bunch of hearts, mostly from hobos.
What? Wait, okay, you have a pacemaker that turns you into super monster and it's destroying your heart, and you have to go get new hearts, but hobos?
Well, where else are you going to get hearts from?
I don't know. There's got to be some third-rate villain who sells body parts somewhere.
Well, yeah, but even that, then you're just taking out the middle, man, because that third-rate villain is probably getting those parts from hobos.
Maybe, I don't know. There's got to be somebody like the assistant to the power broker, the heart broker or something.
So, yeah, it turns out that Scott Lang's daughter, Cassie, also had a heart issue, and he kind of needed the help of this heart transplant surgeon, Dr. Erica Sondheim. Unfortunately, she was Cross's hostage, as she was the one responsible for his heart transplants. So Lang ended up... he's the origin villain. He ended up stealing Hank Pym's Ant-Man suit so that he could get Dr. Sondheim out of there.
Uh-huh.
And so, Ant-Man fought him, and Darren Cross had a heart attack and died from overexertion.
So, wow, that's a sad supervillain.
And that was it for him for a long time until the most recent Ant-Man series. Although, despite being dead, this guy has a fairly extensive extended family, most of whom are supervillains. Well, one of whom is a supervillain. He's the cousin to William Cross, the Cross-obsessed hypnotic spy master who usually fights Hawkeye.
Well, with a last name like Cross, you know, that's just screaming out for villain powers.
Sure, and Crossfire is a pretty cool villain name. I'm very fond of Crossfire.
Yeah. Although you kind of expect more like Crosswind as a nephew or something.
Well, Darren Cross also had a son, Augustine Cross, who took over the business, and also employed Hawkeye for a fairly long time.
Weird.
Like he was the company's head of security.
So you're employing the guy your cousin is trying to kill, and it's got to be awkward.
And I think that was somehow connected. I can't remember exactly how that goes. I need to get some 80s issues of Marvel Team Up. Marvel 2-in-1, because the thing was also involved somehow.
Oh.
And anyway, so in the recent Nick Spencer, Ramon Rosanis Ant-Man series, it turns out that Darren Cross has been alive in like a tube for years.
Okay.
and he needs it, but again, he needs a new heart, and so his son and also his cousin are out to get that heart, and it turns out that it would be super helpful if he had a heart that would, like, grow with him, one that had been exposed to PIM particles. And it just so happened that one such heart happened to belong to Cassie Lang, to her stint as Stature.
Oh, yeah, her heart problem never comes up in the movie, does it?
No, it does not.
Just a girl in the movie.
Oh, I guess that's too much to put in anyway.
Yeah, that would sort of complicate things, maybe a little too
much.
And so they end up, you know, he ends up getting her heart, although thankfully she gets a replacement pretty quickly because Erica Sondheim is also around. And so this guy is back now.
Neat.
With the little girl's heart.
Yes. Well, it's big because it's got pin particles in it.
Yeah.
But he's still a huge pink guy.
I'm looking at the pre-mutation version of him, and I'm sorry, that's just Bruce Wayne crossed with Wolverine.
Yeah.
Or, what's the Mastermind?
What's his name? Jason Wingard, the X-Men villain.
Yeah. This kind of looks like that in a pretty snappy suit. But yeah, and then he becomes sort of giant roided out Nixon. Okay, so he's still alive with a little girl's heart that has PIM particles in it, so it changes with him. So that might slowly be spreading blood into him with PIM particles, so maybe he could shrink and grow a little bit now?
So he can just be like a normal-sized pink lumpy guy?
Yeah, he probably can't change to ant size, but he can get a little bit taller or a little bit shorter to fit indoors.
So I have a question. Do you think the nucleo-organics that were invented for his pacemaker are ever going to be MacGuffin in a Marvel movie?
I wouldn't rule it out at this point.
Maybe. You don't know what's going to... We've had Batroc the Leaper. Anything is possible.
And also, I could totally see Crossfire as like an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. villain.
Yeah, with a vastly different design. It's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, you know, he's not going to have like a cross-shaped titanium codpiece, but...
he's like a color-inverted version of the Transformer Ratchet.
Well, yes.
It's like instead of being all white with some red crosses, he's all red with white crosses. And one on his crotch. It's weird thing.
I mean, I could, you know, like he showed up on that Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon, and he's kind of just a guy in a suit with a robot eye.
Oh, yeah. Who could shoot good like a Deadshot or something.
Yeah.
Robot eye.
Like you said, he kind of looks like an albino Deadshot.
Yeah. Oh, wait, so...
Oh, my God, I found... Okay, that makes too much sense now. The appendix entry seems to note the need to clarify that he is not related to Rob Liefeld.
Not created by Rob Liefeld because of all these bulging, improbable muscles.
But that he has no known connection to Rob Liefeld.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at that picture and the picture on the right side of the page, and I question the assertion.
No. Somebody, well, he was created in 79, so that's pre-Liefeld.
Even so, and I can't see this guy doing a Levi's commercial.
No.
I still can't believe Rob did.
This guy doesn't wear pants. He's got a little black thong. He's like a really creepy Italian gangster.
He spent a little too much time in that Sicilian sun.
He's just a giant magenta guy. It's like, okay, so
Hammerhead could kind of knock him for gimmick infringement, couldn't he?
Yeah. Okay, so he's got a pacemaker on his heart, so artificial heart, and his cousin has an artificial eye. Does everyone in the family have something mechanically replaced?
His son is just a dude so far, but...
He's probably got a robot tongue or something.
He's got like a you know, artificial knee or something.
Yeah.
It's not that impressive, but, you know.
We need more of the crosses. We need the... Well, this guy needs a better name than just Darren Cross. Unless he's going to go with Agonistes, but that doesn't go with the cross theme, because you bring in Crossfire, get his son... Bring his son in as Crosswind.
Or they might just give him the yellow jacket suit now.
Yeah. Richard Nixon in a yellow jacket suit.
All right, so shall we wrap her up?
Sure. Yeah, we don't really know what to do with Cross because his name kind of sucks. Wait, the yellow jacket suit, that was Hank Pym's? Was he the only one to use that?
Also, there was Rita DeMera, who was a criminal who stole it and also later reformed and became a member of the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, whoa, she traveled forward in time? What?
Yes.
Huh. Weird. Oh, now I want a Guardians of the Galaxy crossover with Ant-Man. No, I don't.
It's also been Ultron in Ultimate Universe.
Wait, Ultron was Yellow Jacket?
Well, Yellow Jacket was an android, and Ultron took control of that android to try to murder Scarlet Witch out of jealousy.
Ah.
Ah. All right, so I think signing off, I'm Rob London.
I'm David Henyon.
I'm Alex, no last name given.
Okay.
You'll find us again on the Beast Wars Stasis podcast, because we don't do this one as much, except for movies. Yeah, that's it. Oh, are we going to do the Fantastic Four movie?
Probably not.
No. I want to do Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice just for how painful and angry we're going to be at it. Because it'll be comedy gold, possibly, or it'll be just us cursing for 2 hours.
I'd be willing to join in on that because that looks...
Yeah.
I mean...
What the... The red capes are coming! That makes no sense! The trailer is just stupid. I know, they're going for the redcoats are coming, so it might make sense in the context of that scene, but in a trailer, it's just some idiot with bad hair saying, the red capes are coming, the red capes are coming, in the whole most ridiculous voice. Fuck.
The one thing about it that I'm willing to give a shot is Ben Affleck as Batman.
Yeah. They got Jeremy Irons as Alfred?
Alfred.
That doesn't seem right.
That's one sketchy Alfred.
Yeah, that seems like more of a jerk Alfred than the one in the Gotham TV series. It was like smacking Bruce around or something. Yay, we did a thingy.
No, hey, Jeremy Irons is... Okay, okay, IMDb just said, okay, yeah, maybe that'll work to me.
What?
Because look at his profile picture.
He looks like Alfred, but I don't think he's got the right attitude for an Alfred. An Alfred should be more respectable and noble and kind, and Jeremy Irons...
Try to take over a city for money in revenge for having your brother killed by Bruce Willis.
he's the villain in the Dungeons and Dragons movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, at least he shouldn't be phoning in his performance this time, but...
No, he'll chew all the scenery.
Oh, yes.
Okay, that might be entertaining. I might be rooting for Alfred. It's like, just punch Bruce already. He's being an idiot. Oh, that movie's going to drive me crazy. I want to see it just to be mad at it. Oh, wait, what else is coming out? I was like, okay, Fantastic Four is next month. Batman v Superman, blah blah blah, is March or something?
Yes.
What else is coming out next year? We're getting Civil Wars next year? Question mark?
Yes.
Yeah, Civil Wars.
And that's the only...
That's probably going to be opposite Batman, Superman.
I think it's a month apart or something, and wasn't there something else that it wasn't Marvel? Oh, the X-Men movie.
Oh, right. That's coming out next year.
Yeah. So, hopefully that'll be good. Maybe the apocalypse looks stupid, but whatever.
Anyway, Doctor Strange is also out next year.
Oh, yeah!
That seems soon.
November next year, later. So more than a year.
Okay, so we are getting 2 Marvel movies next year.
Yes. Okay. And that's the last year, because then in 2017 we get 3.
Yes, Guardians 2.
Yeah, Guardians 2, Volume Spider-Man, 2. And Thor.
Yay, Spider-Man.
And Steven!
It's the
Michael Caine is the least Alfred-y Alfred there's been on TV.
But I love Michael Caine.
He was amazing in that role, but he's probably the furthest there's actually been from, like, this seems like Alfred.
Yeah.
This seemed like Michael Caine.
Well, yeah, but it works.
Yeah.
He's like the nicer... Well, yeah, he's like Batman the Animated Series one, kind of. Just without facial hair.
It's the look and the mannerisms, not the background. The background totally still works for...
Yeah.
Like Batman the Animated Series Alfred, but...
Why do we fall, Master Bruce? The very best Alfred is still the one from Big O. Although his name is Norman, but he's totally Alfred.
It strikes me that Alfred is Christopher Lee.
Oh, wow, that would have been really good.
No, I mean, he is really Christopher Lee.
Yeah, basically, because nice, refined, but you push him, he'll fuck you up.
Nice, refined, worked for the SAS in World War II, knows how to kill a man in about 80 ways without lifting a finger, lives to be not old enough, but still very long life.
That story about him killing people and not wanting to tell the details. Yeah.
That is the best story from the production of Lord of the Rings. Just, no, that's not what a guy being stabbed sounds like. This is what a guy being stabbed sounds like. Didn't even need to say, I know.
Anyway,
and then he made a metal album about how he was related to Charlemagne.
Oh.